This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm your host, Arum. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Let's start the show.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest. I'm here today with Dawit Lema. He's the founder and serves as the managing director of Crimson ACMC PLC. He's a Swiss citizen, but of Ethiopian origin, and he has lived and worked all over the world, from Zambia to Afghanistan, the U.S. to Switzerland, making him a true global citizen. Dawit returned to Ethiopia in 2012 after almost 30 years abroad, as he recognized the thriving potential and opportunities being displayed in Ethiopia's economic resurgence. Dawit, I've given just a brief introduction. I was wondering if you can take time and let the bandits get to know you a little bit better.
Thanks, Arum. First of all, let me thank you for this opportunity to introduce myself and be part of this podcast. As you mentioned, I'm of Ethiopian origin, been around the world. Just quite briefly, I think I'll just state that I had the opportunity to travel growing up as a kid because my dad worked for an international NGO. So, you know, lived in many countries in Africa, was educated in the U.S., started my career in the U.S. With Red Bull and moved on to Europe where my parents were based and started living and working in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. But I think most importantly, and I think this is something I want to say to all bandits is, I mean, the call to Africa really did hit me, and I returned about 4 years ago, almost 4 years ago, initially to work. I was working for a couple agencies, but now, and we'll get into it a little bit later, just the opportunities enabled me to actually start my own business, my own agency here, where elsewhere in the world, I don't think outside of Africa or maybe even Asia, you would never had the opportunity to start your own business and be successful.
Yeah. Wow, that's really great. And before we even started this podcast, we were talking a little bit, and I jokingly called you the plane guy. So can you speak a little bit more on your passion and that side of things?
Yeah, sure. I fell in love with airplanes when I was a kid. I mean, when I was 7 years old, my best friend and I, when we live in Zambia, actually, we decided that we were going to be pilots or cowboys when we grew up. And after a little discussion with our parents, you know, they all told us cowboys is not a career decision. So we both decided we'd be pilots. And ironically, him and I both end up becoming pilots. I studied aeronautical engineering and flight technology at Purdue, where I also learned to fly planes. I'm a licensed commercial pilot, licensed in the U.S., licensed in Switzerland, licensed in South Africa. I'm a licensed aircraft engineer. I've done just about everything. I've worked in every sector of the aviation, except for dispatch and ticketing. Yeah, everything. I've done everything else, actually. My specialty actually is private aviation. When I was in Switzerland, after I finished my master's, I started working for a company called TAG Aviation, which is world's largest private aviation charter company. And that's really where all the years of experience that accrued prior just culminated. Business aircraft, private jets is already exciting enough as it is. The sector is very much different from the airline sector. In fact, that I got to use all my different skill sets. Worked as a mechanic, worked in handling department, worked in CRM. I flew charter flights as a contract pilot. It was very exciting times. As you mentioned, that was my first passion.
Wow. And wow, that almost sounds like some 007 type credentials.
Something like that. Yeah.
Cool.
People tend to say things like that as well. I'm used to that. People, when I tell people I'm a Swiss citizen, they look at me kind of, excuse me. So you do this, you've been all over the world. You have a Swiss passport. You're doing what? You have your own communications agency right now. Who are you?
Yeah.
I get that a lot. Who are you?
Yes, definitely. I think we can sort of give you the title "Most Interesting Man Alive." That's something that probably is befitting. And just wondering, before we get into what Crimson actually does, I want to sort of set the framework and talk about your early life. You said you traveled a lot. How has that sort of shaped who you are today?
Well, I think the fact that I like to think of myself as a global citizen. Mm-hmm. I think also my parents were very supportive and encouraged us to make friends from all over the world. And I always tell people that the cultural education I got is much more valuable than the formal education that I received. Hmm. Just the fact that I have either lived or know somebody or have interacted with somebody from almost every country in the world. I mean, and the thing is, I think the most valuable asset from all of that is the fact that I can go anywhere in the world that I've never been to, and within 24 hours, I'm comfortable. Hmm. I've got my bearings together, or I've got, not uncomfortable. I mean, one of the probably most interesting places I've been to in the world is Afghanistan. Hmm. I went there just before I started my master's. I went as a volunteer. Mm-hmm. I worked with an NGO that did humanitarian flight support. So we flew the doctors, and the aid workers into the most remote parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And I'll be very honest, I remember getting on the plane in Geneva, mm-hmm. kind of like, oh my God, I'm going to Afghanistan. And this was 2003, so mm-hmm. we're talking wartime. And I was nervous, but then it was almost instantly, as soon as I arrived there, I felt at peace, because the Afghan culture, there's a lot of similarities with the kind of the Ethiopian culture, the Semitic culture, the way you mm-hmm. greet each other, the sense of culturally I found that link, mm-hmm. and I was, within 24 hours I was set, and went about doing my own thing, and I can actually truly say that I actually got a lot along with my local employees mm-hmm. or colleagues than, say, my European and American colleagues. Because, I mean, the eating with the hands, when men greet, they hug each other shoulder to shoulder. These mm-hmm. little things mm-hmm. That we do in Ethiopia as well was kind of helped me build a positive relationship. Hmm. So yeah, I think that was a long-winded answer, but overall, I think it's the most valuable thing is I can go anywhere in the world and be comfortable and adjust and go about my business without having to really, actively or purposefully try and adjust.
Hmm. Wow. I mean, and again, we love details here at the Knowledge Bandit, so I appreciate that.
Sure, no.
I appreciate that bit of detail you gave us. So moving to Crimson, how did you come to start Crimson in Ethiopia?
It was October 2014. I just got married, mm-hmm. and I had worked for several agencies consulting here, and even worked as a deputy. General manager of a small private airline. Mm-hmm. I'd worked in the communications industry here for a couple of agencies, consulted here and there. And I was working for National Airways at the time. I was a deputy general manager there. Mm-hmm. Comfortable position. Ran the company. I got to fly when I wanted to fly. I did as I wish. But mm-hmm. within a 3-week period, three very crucial people in my life all said the same thing to me. And this was in separate conversations, and this is something that I'd always wanted to do, and they just brought it up. My mentor, him and I were having a cup of coffee, and he told me, you should start your own business. You've got the network, you've got the drive, you've got the experience now in Ethiopia, you've adjusted, start. Then, like a week later, my wife mm-hmm. said the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then a week after that, my parents said the same thing. Mm-hmm. So within a 3-week period, in October of 2014, it was kind of in the stars, as they say. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well then, and that's really how I went about the beginning of Crimson.
Hmm. And can you explain to the bandits what exactly Crimson does?
Crimson is a how do you say that? What consultants would say, we are a business development and strategy consultants in the aviation sector and media and communication sector.
Okay. And to break it down for us even further, for those of us who are not too familiar with the aviation sector, what exactly does that entail?
Well, for example, some of the stuff I do, I advise the Minister of Transport, the Ethiopian Minister of Transport himself as Chief of Staff and the head of the civil aviation on developing the business aviation, the private aviation sector. The airline sector in Ethiopia is okay. Ethiopian Airlines is doing very well. But the private aviation sector is almost non-existent. So I advise them on how to help, how to build that sector. I work with the smaller operators here, the private operators, whether they need help with communication strategies, business development strategies, even down to pricing their flights. Even just doing press releases. I mean, it can get down to the smallest tasks. But I think the majority of my time I actually spend is working with foreign operators, foreign private operators, who have some form of operation here in Ethiopia, and they need some. I represent their services. Like, for example, if a private jet's coming here into Ethiopia, they will call me up, and I will coordinate the services. I will make sure the Ethiopian Airlines is on top of things to make sure the services are good to go. Anywhere from booking vehicles to the crew hotels, but just really just some of the more technical stuff, landing permits and flyover permits, things like that. I process their operations for them here in Ethiopia.
Oh, very fascinating. And I usually like to know, from sort of getting the idea to actually implementing, how long did that process take you?
Not very long. I mean, the idea came about in October of 2014. By December 2014, I registered the company. The longest part was here. Registering a company is a long process. Not the process itself, but waiting in line, Ministry of Trade, the paperwork, getting this stamped, that took a while. Crimson wasn't officially a company until April, because I had to get my VAT certificate. I had to get my my tax identification number and business licenses and all that. That took some time, but by December was the first official document I had. The name was registered, and end of I put in my letter of resignation, and I started working on February 1st for Christmas. So about 3 months.
Wow, that's actually really quick.
I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that because it was ironically throughout my career, I was either in the media and communications marketing world or I was in the aviation world, and I knew that I wanted to do both. So I set about and just put things on paper and went forward with it.
And you talked a little bit about that process of registering the business, and I feel like that's something that's a rampant across Africa, where we see it's difficult, whether it's Nigeria, whether it's Kenya, whether it's Ethiopia, you see it's a little bit difficult to sort of push through that process of registering a business. So what tips can you give, especially to people who are living in diaspora, what tips can you give them on registering a business in Ethiopia?
We have these things called good diaspora sami. It means basically someone who facilitates these things. This is their full-time job. They register companies. They take care of the paperwork. Get a good diaspora sami. Get a good facilitator. Pay him and let him deal. Because these are usually people who either worked in the government office or the tax office. So they don't they don't sit around and wait 4 hours in line. They know the guy who's they know exactly who puts a stamp on the documents that they need, and they know him because he's a friend, or they worked with him, or whatever it is. They just deal with that. Do not waste your time and energy. Pay someone to do it. Now, for example, when I was renewing, every year you have to renew your business license, and you have to get your tax clearances. You have to do that. I paid someone to do it. Took him a day and a half. It would have taken me probably a month and a half if I had to do it. I just gave him power of attorney. He took care of the paperwork. I remember I gave him all my documents on Wednesday. He called me on Friday afternoon. It's done. I met him Saturday morning, paid him, gave him, invited him to lunch. He's also a friend of mine, so I know him. So it was met him on Saturday morning, and he gave me all my documents back, renewed, everything settled. So yes, my advice would be get someone to do it for you.
Okay.
Pay someone to do it.
Yeah.
The actual paperwork.
Okay. Okay. And you mentioned that this this person that was able to help you out in pushing the process through was a friend of yours. But for some of those people who are not exactly sure how to go about finding this facilitator, what sort of actionable advice can you give them?
I mean, it depends. I mean, if you're coming in as an investor and if you have family, if you're from Nigeria and you're looking to go back to Nigeria and you still have family there, talk to your family. Or if you have friends from whatever country you're about to move into, anybody who has experience, talk to someone on the ground. Get the lay of the land.
Yeah.
Not just processing, but the paperwork, but how things are done. You know, there's in Africa, not just in Ethiopia, I think across the continent, there's a way things are done that's written. It's written on paper how it's supposed to be done, but the way it's really done, or the quickest way, is not on paper. There's, reading between the lines, the loopholes, the shortcuts, and you're trying to go against all of that. You know, you're trying to follow the straight path, and people just slow you down here. They just slow you down for no reason. Paperwork, bureaucracy, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's really a lot of good advice. I know when I was first starting my first venture, that was probably the most difficult part of it, was finding someone on ground who I could trust to push everything through for me in a timely fashion. But it's all a process, Bandits. Take your time, find someone you can trust, and then sort of just push through the process. It's not going to be sort of as instant as it would be here in the U.S. or maybe in Europe or wherever, but it's a process. It's something that you have to go through, and I think Dawit has given some really actionable advice: is find people you trust, find people who know the lay of the land, and move from there. And now we want to get to know you a little bit more as an entrepreneur. So what fires you up in the morning? What's your morning routine, and why is that routine so important?
Coffee. A cup of coffee.
Well, no, I'm sure with the Ethiopian coffee, it's definitely great.
My wife complains a lot that she says I drink too much coffee. But the first thing I do is I definitely have my coffee. But breakfast with my family is very important to me in the morning. We always have and we're talking, sit-down breakfast at the dining table. This is something that I grew up with as a kid, and something I'm going to instill in my family. And then obviously after breakfast, get ready. I start the day, the work day, before I leave the house. I check my emails, and then I start making phone calls. So on the way to work, because I live a little bit just outside, we call it the suburbs. So it's anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour drive into the office. So I start working before I reach the office, and especially phone calls, because those, get those out of the way. And emails. I remember reading somewhere where successful people don't check their emails in the morning. I tried that, and no, man. Afternoons, I'm tired. I can't be responding to emails in the afternoon. So I get all that stuff out: the emails, the phone calls, the errands, the tasks, so that I can focus when I get to the office on the work that's at hand, whether it's preparing a project proposal for a client or going to a meeting with a client. I've got the phone calls and the emails out of the way.
And I think it's great that you sort of mentioned that, where you read something about how successful entrepreneurs don't check their email in the morning, but it's also understanding how you operate. You know, one of the things I've read over and over again is, when you're setting up your morning task, put those things that are sort of painful for you to do first. Get those out of the way, and it sort of sets you up. You think about the rest of your day. You're like, all right, well, I've already gotten the painful stuff out of the way, so it makes the day go a little bit easier.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you touched a little bit on this, but just thinking now, can you sort of describe the lifestyle of an entrepreneur in Ethiopia? Because a lot of people might have this idea of what it'll be like, but I'm sure you had an idea of what it would be like, but then that sort of was flipped upside down. So can you just explain a little bit the lifestyle of an entrepreneur in Ethiopia?
It depends. if you are starting off, you can be doing a lot of stuff on your own. And I'm just now getting out of that phase. I'm now hiring. I've got staff. I've got team. Mm. At the very beginning, you are the managing director. You are the HR manager. You are the finance director. You are the administrative assistant. You're doing everything. Mm. You're doing all the paperwork. So it gets very busy. And at the same time, you're trying to juggle. Here in Ethiopia, people like to sit and talk. They like to have meetings. Mm-hmm. You have to develop the relationship before the business comes.
Yeah.
Because there's a major trust issue. Ethiopians, they really got to trust you. So it'll take you 3, 4, 5 even informal cups of coffee at a cafe or at their office or at your office before you even start talking about business. Mm. But once that relationship is established, then you move into the work. But at the beginning, man, be prepared to work. Be prepared to do a lot of the legwork yourself, which is also, I feel, I'm glad I did, because you establish. I mean, I liked it. Well, I mean, having lived and worked in Switzerland, they tend quality and attention to detail is something that Swiss have ingrained in me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So because of that, I mean, I joke and say I'm OCD because I'm very, very detail oriented. Mm. Attention to detail is something that I focus on, and quality of delivery. Mm. Now, having worked by myself for the first eight or so months, I've established that as a pillar of the company. Mm. So whatever documents I have or whatever collaterals I have in the office, even the way the office looks, the furniture I bought, everything, expresses that. So I think it's very important. You lay the foundation and make sure you lay the foundation correctly. So starting off by yourself definitely helps because it's just you. Hmm. You know?
Hmm. Wow. Yeah, I think it's always just good to understand what you're getting yourself into, because oftentimes the life of an entrepreneur is very much glamorized and you sort of don't have the right mindset going into it. It is a lot of work, and most of it is sort of the boring legwork. Yeah. Like you mentioned, you are the HR manager, you are the CFO, you are all of these things that are focused on detail.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I see, a big part of being an entrepreneur is also not only being able to follow that passion and turn it into a business, but also to generate revenue. So can you share a few ways that you bring in income?
To tie in with the previous question is, do not expect to come in there I'm working on, I'm an entrepreneur, I've got a great business idea. It's going to take time for revenue. Definitely do your financial planning. Definitely think, save up or get a loan or, work with your family or something, to be sustainable for 6 months, because it's not going to come in that quickly. Mm. But also, we all have grandiose, wishes that, in 1 year or 5 years or even 10 years, I want my company to be this big. I'm going to be successful. But you got to start with the small things. I think, plan big, obviously aim big for big projects, to aim for the Fortune 50, Fortune 500 companies, accounts, but don't underestimate or shy away from, the small grocery shop down the street, the corner shop who needs your services. I mean, it's not glamorous, but guess what? They're paying your bills. Mm. They're paying your rent. Mm. They're just to quantify this. I mean, maybe a Fortune 500 company might be like a $10,000 to $20,000 per month account. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a while before you get there. It's a little corner shop. That might be $500. Mm. But that's $500 coming in. Mm. You get another one of those, that's another $1,000. Mm-hmm. These are things that you have to do at the beginning, because the last thing you want to find yourself is you're aiming so big and so high that all of a sudden, the building landlord is telling you you're behind on your rent 3 months and you have to get out because you were not able to generate income.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really like this. I like what you're saying about sort of being realistic, being practical, being pragmatic. Absolutely. When you're approaching business. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than you trying to follow your passion and someone is telling you, look, you can't be here anymore. You're not making your rent. You're not paying your bills. All of these things are definitely important as an entrepreneur, and not being able to focus on them takes away from sort of the capacity you're able to work efficiently with your business. And so I want to ask now, are you sort of fully sufficient on Crimson, or do you have other ways that you supplement income as well?
No, I'm fully, I think it was about November of last year, we finally became self-sustaining. We were, what you call it, breaking, we broke even. I mean, my goal is to break even after 1 year, which I think for any startup is a realistic goal, or a good goal, actually. So you're successful if you're breaking even. We started breaking even after seven, eight months. Wow. I didn't take an income, for example, at the beginning. I didn't take a salary. Whatever came in was obviously just to pay costs. But I also started off with a loan, so I had planned for 6 months to cover my costs. But no, we're fully self-sustaining. I live off Crimson. I can actually gladly say that.
Wow. And I mean, how does that feel to say that you've built something that can sort of support your lifestyle and now support the life of other people as well?
It's a great feeling, but you know, the cliche, don't rest on your laurels. I make more salary now than I did with the very last job I worked, but I'm reinvesting in the company. I want to grow. I definitely have very high ambitions, and goals as well. And there's no rest. Crimson is only 1 year old, and this is not the time to. It's a good benchmark to look back on the fact that we survived. You know, I remember reading a statistic like something like 80% of startups don't make it past the first year. I'm like, okay, cool, made it in the first 20. I'm in that 20%, but
yeah,
that's it, and then just move on. You know, you just keep growing.
And you mentioned a word that I really like to hear is goals. And definitely from talking to you and seeing how you've hit these different milestones, it looks like you're a person who sets goals. So can you talk a little bit about the goals that you set, and also just about how setting goals in general is a good practice?
Well, I'm not the best at setting goals, but I like to think of achievements. For example, I mentioned Fortune 500 companies, things like that. I set my goals based on, for example, I decided that the easiest way for me to measure success was the kind of clients that I would start, my first Fortune 500 client, my second, then the size of the account, number of accounts, and this was much more realistic than saying, oh, by December 2016, I want to have this much revenue. No, it helped me target. It made me focus. When I was, for example, Emirates Airlines is one of my accounts, and that was something I really wanted to go for, because Emirates is the largest or the biggest airline brand. And I said, okay, if I want to be recognized as a real aviation consultant and a real media communications client, then I need to have the best airline on my books. And I did, and I got them on my books. So that's how I set the goals, based on something that's more tangible and more long-term than your balance sheet.
And I like how you said you sort of defined what success meant, because sort of setting that success marker with just a financial goal might not be the best indicator, and it might derail you from what your main purpose, what your main goal in Crimson was. And I'm sure that it wasn't easy to land sort of the largest account, but can you talk a little bit about the process, just so people get an idea of how hard you actually had to work to sort of land this account?
It was kind of okay. Here in Ethiopia, there's certain sectors that are protected from foreign agencies. For example, foreign communications agencies can't operate here in Ethiopia. or marketing agencies as a protected sector. So for me, I saw that as an advantage, and I reached out to the foreign agencies, and it's all the big ones, all the big players, the WPPs, the Ogilvies, the Omnicoms and all of them. And eventually I ended up starting working with Havas Media, which is based in Paris. They're the fifth largest marketing group in the world. Mm. And I actually struck up a great relationship with them just because I speak French and they're a French company. So they felt very much at home, working with me. And then they landed the global account. Mm. They landed the Emirates global account. Mm-hmm. I pitched them. I said, well, I need to be the person who's handling that account for you in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's not about hard work. Mm. I think it's more the hardest part is understanding that relationships, nourishing relationships, start nourishing a relationship 1 year, 2 years before you expect to see any return on that. Mm. Just because you recognize that this is someone or some company or an agency that I need to build a relationship with, and it might not, and most likely 9 out of 10 times is not going to bring you a dollar into your account. Mm. But a year later, they might call you. They will definitely when there's an opportunity, your name is the first name that comes into mind for them because of that relationship you built with them. So.
I definitely like that word that you keep saying is relationships. It's about relationships. It's definitely something that people might overlook, and you might go into a relationship initially wanting to see something, but I think for the bandits, it's great advice that Dawood is giving is sort of just build those relationships and maintain them, because you never know what can come out of them in the future. And now we're just going to move into sort of the psyche of an entrepreneur. So I'm sure that you've experienced some difficult times throughout the 1 year that Crimson has been around. So can you take us to one of those specific points where you're just like, what is going on? I don't understand why I'm in this situation. Can you explain to that?
It was kind of a funny situation. It was a time when, my integrity was questioned. By a former employer slash friend, someone I looked up to, someone who gave me my first job here in Ethiopia, kind of took me under their wing. They were in marketing communications. They're an agency, and I don't know if they felt threatened or whatever, but they accused me of stealing their clients. They accused me of, they're saying, we should have made you sign a non-compete clause. But what was more challenging for me was the fact that they had slandered my name. Before they approached me, these false accusations, of course. They'd gone and told pretty much everybody in our circles. And for me, the down was one. I felt betrayed. I think I felt really betrayed by these people that I trusted. But two, I was angry. Furious. I was absolutely furious. And I had to curb that. I had to curb that that anger, and I had to be the bigger person. Talk about my integrity, but let my integrity talk for itself. It's been six months since that happened. The storm has died, and the water is level. Those who need to know, those who count, those who are important, know that that this was just a bunch of lies. So that was probably the biggest down for me. Wow. I wasn't talking about the 2 months in September, October, where I was struggling to pay rent, but it was more that the betrayal. You'll get that a lot, actually.
Yeah,
a valuable lesson for me.
Wow. And I'm sure that you probably had some people helping you through it. So what were the things that your sort of close circle of friends, family, what were they telling you during this time to sort of help you move past it?
Just like I just said, you said, let your integrity speak for itself.
Hmm.
Just you know, there's just do keep doing what you were doing. Those, you know, those who know you, those who know you already know this is blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who don't, you know, don't put yourself in a, also they said, don't put yourself in a position where your integrity will be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's separate from this incident, like, because people, you know, make sure your integrity stays intact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let your work do the talking for itself. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about it. Let your integrity do the talking for you. Let your quality of work and you know, let the work that you're doing speak for itself. So that was the advice I got.
Wow. And I think that's very, very good advice. I mean, the road to success is not a straight path. There are going to be things that are hitting you left and right. And sort of the mark of a good entrepreneur is that person who focuses on what they need to focus on and they push towards that goal that they've set for themselves. Yeah. And now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about in the last year of Crimson, what has been the highest point that you felt so far where you're just like, you know, this is where I belong. This is what I should be doing.
I think it was, as a couple, there's quite a few actually. When I was working on a rebranding Ethiopia project, it was one of the first projects I signed up that I got. Densu is another one of the huge, huge they're the world's largest advertising agency. It's a Japanese agency, and they were one lead in this project. And I got an email in January saying, hey, we're moving into phase two, and we want to work with you again. The quality of your work, it just speaks for itself. You know, it was great that they would it was more than just a returning client, but it was a returning client who just was very happy with the work that I delivered.
Mm.
That was one high point in terms of just, I felt like, okay, the work I'm doing is making it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the referrals, that's really when I felt that, it was that I had made it.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, Fortune 500 companies started calling me up. Mr. Dawit, we've heard of you through so and so. Would you please come in and we have a discussion?
Hmm.
So that's really when I realized that, okay, I think I've left my mark. Companies, GE, Total, these are Fortune 25 companies who called me up. So I think that was when I realized.
Hmm. And I'm sure that sort of receiving that revenue was great, but knowing that you're adding value with what you were doing was sort of even a sweeter feeling. Would you sort of say that that's the case?
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm someone who's very, very, I'm very quality orientated.
Hmm.
And I get much more pride and joy knowing that I'm offering a quality service.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously don't get me wrong, Bandits, you got to pay your bills.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make the money. But if you're able to pay your bills and people are singing your praises, are thankful, are grateful, thank you for your work, for your service, that's a lot more gratifying than just a simple, paycheck at the end of the month.
Yeah. I definitely agree. And with that, we're going to move into the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. So what was originally stopping you from taking that next step to become an entrepreneur?
That was being comfortable. I had a comfortable salary, comfortable position. I was comfortable. I was comfortable in life.
Hmm. And at what point did you stop looking at your business as a project and more as an actual business?
December 2014, when I registered, when I got the name registered, that's when I realized that, okay, I've got a company, an actual company is registered in Ethiopia.
Mm.
So that just made me realize, okay, this is not a pet project. This is not a hobby. This is real. I'm about to quit my job. So I need to make this work.
Mm-hmm. And what quality do you have that most contributes to your success as an entrepreneur?
My work ethic. I work hard. Mm. I work very hard. Mm. I work, I, 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 I have no problem with pulling a 20-hour day if need be, which I have done before. I've done that. Work hard, but also I think, like I mentioned before, quality, attention to detail.
What quality do you wish to improve on most?
My time management. I think I spend too much. Sometimes I spend too much time overkill on the attention to detail, the OCD. Which, you know, sometimes I've just got to learn to say, okay, this doesn't require 3 or 4 hours of my time. This requires an hour. This other, you know. So I think that would be it, time management.
And how do you learn to delegate tasks? You know, as you're trying to grow your business into something much larger, you have to sort of become a better delegator. So how do you handle that?
I'm learning, still learning. I can't answer that question because I'm still learning. Because some of the experiences I've had in management positions, but running your business is completely different. You know, when you're a director of something, you have just one, you know, or deputies here or manager here, you're responsible for one or two, maybe three departments. But when you're running your own company, you have to have a very holistic approach. So some of the skill sets is great, but I think it's also when it's your own company, you tend not to let go. you get the sense that only I can do it. I know what I want, so I'm gonna do it myself. So you have to let go, and I'm in that process now. I'm letting go, and I'm assigning my staff more and giving them more responsibility and trusting them more.
What's the best advice you ever received, and who is it from?
It was one of my actual mentors, I'd say, I've never met the person, but just do it. Richard Branson. Just do it.
Yeah. And what book are you reading currently?
Actually, I'm not reading a book. I don't have time to read books right now. I wish I had time.
Yeah.
I'm reading reports and just, yeah, I'm researching right now.
That's good. And do you feel a sense of belonging where you are right now as an entrepreneur in Ethiopia? Do you feel that sense of belonging?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not only as an entrepreneur, but I feel like I'm also giving back. I mean, I'm not in a cliched way of I came back to give my country, but I mean, I left Ethiopia when I was a kid. I'm 27 years all around the world. I feel that whatever skills I'd acquired, whatever knowledge I've acquired, I've now come back and I'm giving that back to the country. If I was in Geneva, I'd be working a great job, high level, whatever. But I'm in Ethiopia, and I best of both worlds. I know how things work here, but I'm bringing that standard, the global standard here, and that's indirectly, even if it's only three staff members, but I'm influencing the growth of the private sector in Ethiopia, service sector.
And what advice would you give to a young Dawit just starting out?
Never give up. I mean, that's so cliched, but just don't give up. It's frustrating. It's hard, but there's this Chinese proverb. Very good friend of mine, actually. She sent me about 10 years ago. And to this day, I always tell my employees this. The proverb goes, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So be passionate. And when you're passionate, it will drive you, and it will keep you going. It will prevent you from giving up, actually.
I like that. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yep.
And what is one internet resource or application that you couldn't live without besides Google?
It's called GTasks. It's this app I have on my phone. It is phenomenal. It syncs your calendar. It's a to-do list. And it syncs your calendar. It integrates your proper calendar. But you can break down the tasks by date, by group or company or whatever it is. I mean, I wouldn't get anything done if it was every task I need to do over the next 4 weeks is programmed into this thing.
Wow, I haven't heard of that yet, but I'm definitely going to check it out. GTasks, that's everyone
GTasks,
listening.
If it's, I don't know if it's available on iOS, but it's on Android.
Okay, Okay, great. And what do you do to unwind from a hectic schedule?
I like my son. My son's 6 months old. He is a comedian. I mean, he makes me laugh. Usually Saturdays, except well, today I'm working, but usually Saturdays are my day with him.
Okay.
I spend Saturdays with him. We just play. We watch movies together. Well, I watch movies. He just sits on my lap or I just hold him. So yeah, definitely playing with my son, spending time with my son. And I'm a huge soccer fan. Liverpool. I've been a Liverpool fan for almost 30 years. So watching Liverpool games, it's definitely just great way for me. I just kind of forget, you know, go. I go to the sports bar and grill down the street with friends, have some burgers, some beers, and just relax and just forget, you know, sometimes I even turn my phone off and just unwind completely.
Yeah. And why is it so important for you to be able to get out and unwind like that?
Oh, you need your brain as much as you, I mean, even biologically or psychologically, whatever you want to call it, you need to step away. And there's merit in that. Like, for example, if you're writing a paper or if you're doing something, if you're building a doghouse, if you're getting frustrated, they say just walk away, take a break and come back and things become clear. Same with you know, work stuff. I mean, your brain actually resets itself, and when it resets itself, not in the literal sense of resetting, but walking, you know, just getting that break gives you come back refreshed. You come back with a little bit more verve, a little more passion, if you will, and you even sometimes with more clarity, you see better.
Yeah, I agree.
Rest. Don't ever underestimate. I'm a workaholic, and I have suffered from burnout, and it is nuts. Your body will shut down. Your body will turn itself off, and that is not. when it does that, it's not a good feeling.
I can only imagine. And finally, to close out the rapid fire round, do you feel like you've made it yet?
No, not yet. I don't think. But that's just me. I don't think I'll. I mean, even if by some other people's standards, I would have made it, I still probably wouldn't feel it. There's always. You can always be better, stronger. You know, it's something I learned from working with Japanese is their work ethic, their goals. I mean, these people for them, like a short term goal is or achievement is 50 years. That's short term for them. You know what I mean?
Wow.
They think generations. So for me, I don't think till, you know. God willing, God blesses me with with more kids and grandkids and great grandchildren. I'm thinking for about them. You know, I want to be, I want to make sure that, you know, whatever I do sets the foundation for them. So, no, but today definitely not made it yet. No, I definitely have not made it. but in terms of, you know, am I successful? Yes. But have I made it? No, not yet.
Okay. And I think that was a great rapid fire round. That's the end of the rapid fire round. And as we sort of cool down, what book would you recommend to the bandits who are sort of just starting out?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend Richard Branson's Business Strip Bear book. That book really changed things for me in terms of it gave me a different perspective on business. It's an excellent book, actually.
And for the bandits listening, on Dawit's page on knowledgebandits.com, we'll provide all of this information, the links that he's offered up, the apps that he uses, and even this book. We'll put all of that up for you to take a look at. And who are your mentors, and what would you say is the value of mentorship?
I think my dad and Mr. Kifle, Gash Kifle, are, I mean, obviously my dad just, is my dad. he made it. You know, when he was born in a rural area in Ethiopia and made it successful. I mean, you know, in his field and NGO world, and has come back to Ethiopia and is a respected member of society in the NGO world. And Gash Kifle, who he actually owns the largest travel agency in Ethiopia, and he gives me great advice, And it's always good to talk to people who've been there before. We're older, obviously. They're all older than me. But they give you perspective. You don't have to do the. You don't have to go down the same path. You always make mistakes. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to say you're not going to make the same mistakes. They can guide you and show you the signs. The fork in the road. They can tell you which side not to go. They can tell you, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's ultimately your decision. And for good and bad. Mm. Not just things to avoid, but also things to practice and to work on.
Mm. Great. And what advice would you give to those people living outside of Ethiopia who are afraid to take that next step that they inherently know they should?
Just do it. Just do it. I mean, you like... And this is just across the board. I'm not talking just to people out there who are thinking about it in Ethiopia. Mm. Even in just work, just do it. The worst thing that can happen is somebody says no, or it doesn't happen, or it doesn't work out. But you'll never know if you don't try. Mm. And 9 out of 10 times you look back and you're like, wow, why didn't I do this earlier? Or why was I scared? Mm. You know. Just do it. Just do it.
Yeah. I like that. Nike's mantra, just do it.
Yeah,
I
think just do it.
It's very applicable to sort of anything you're doing, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're working within an organization, you're trying to climb that ladder, just do it. Just do it. And Dawood, as we say goodbye, unfortunately, we're coming to a close. As we say goodbye, for some of those listeners who have just been so inspired by what you've been talking about so far, how can they connect with you, and what sort of mentorship or internship opportunities might you have for them?
Email is the best way to get to reach me. My email is, I think I provided it to you. It's Dawood, Dawit, at umzinplc.com. I respond to emails. Don't worry. I will respond. Mm. Definitely for anybody who's looking to come to Ethiopia, yeah, I'd be more than interested. I'm always looking for good talent. I think that's something I would give up-and-coming entrepreneurs. Mm. Phase two, after you've done your tour of serving every position in the company by yourself, invest in good people. And I'm always looking for good people, whether it's internship, a position. I'm not one here who says, okay, I need a director of marketing, so I'm gonna go out there and look for a director of marketing. No, I find good people and I try and fit them into, I see what their strengths are, and I create a position around them.
Great. And for those of you who are listening who want that email address again, you can sign up for the Bandits, the Knowledge Bandits newsletter, and we'll send you an email with all of that information. And you can also look on the website. That information will be provided shortly. And Dawood, this has been amazing. And I posed a question to you earlier, and we're going to come back to it. So you're tasked with building the greatest business the world has ever seen. You can bring on any two people, living or dead. With you taking the lead, who would you bring on and what would you do?
I've mentioned this name before and I'll mention it again. I would definitely bring Richard Branson in. He just has an eye for he's people-centric, relationship-centric. Like he knows how to motivate people and build people up. I learned a lot of things reading his books. And he's crazy. I think he'd be a fun person. I think he'd be fun to work with. He's fearless. He's crazy. And then I would bring in Dan Gote. He is, as an African, I think he is the iconic African entrepreneur. Not only has he got a knack or a sense for business, but he's Pan-African. He's a true Pan-African businessman. He's got companies all across Africa. And, humble beginnings, man. Sugar cane.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Selling sugar. I mean, that's and he grew. And he's a force to be reckoned with. So I would love to have him work with me. Because he's definitely got some he knows something.
Yeah.
He knows. It's not by luck. It's not by luck that he's, the largest individual, wealthiest, African individual, business.
Yeah,
and has actually built a global brand. As as an African company, Dangote is a global brand, which is usually not the case.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like that lineup. So Sir Richard Branson, Aliko Dangote, and with Dawit taking the lead.
Or just following. I'll let them fight over it now and just follow.
Well, Dawit, thank you so much for your time today. This has been an amazing experience.
It was a pleasure.
Great.
My pleasure, Rum. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. We want to thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, or Stitcher. You can also follow Knowledge Bandits on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, Bandits, stay inspired.